You'll have to forgive the my PC. It tends to go to sleep a lot, so I might have to back up a few times. It's one of the joys. And the other thing you need to forgive is that I had one cup of coffee. I haven't eaten anything. Speaker working? Can you hear? So I might be just a little bit groggy. I was in Phoenix yesterday with Mark Selznoff, and he was doing live trading all day. And he's an animal. I can never trade that way, ever, never in a million years. I wouldn't call it methodical. I call it anal. I just like things to set up three or four or five or six different ways. And if I don't see it, I generally stand aside. Mark, on the other hand, he sees a wiggle in Intel, he jumps, you know. And he sees a wiggle back in the other direction, he jumps out. And it's one way of doing things, and Mark's very, very successful. And at the end of the day, we're comparing high blood pressure medicines. And his is just a little bit more effective than mine, I think. That's why I like to do things the way I do things. The hard right edge, and what the hard right edge offers to traders is not level two. We've got to get that out of the way right away. I've used level two. I'm not currently using it. I'll use it again in the future. My focus is technical analysis. Back in the Stone Age days of day trading, you know, 1993, 1994, there were some of us who were still doing the thing. And back at that time, level two was just a wish in somebody's heart, I imagine, to get more inside information on the markets and find out what the insiders were doing, what the market makers were doing. Of course, there were no ECNs. That came out of the NASDAQ settlement just in 97. But you know what? Some of us were still able to make money back at that time, stealing ideas from the futures markets and applying those ideas by picking up the telephone. We had some high tech back then. You had push-button dialing. You didn't have rotary dialing. So you call up your broker, and you pick your execution point. And it was practically instant executions back at that time. You could stay on the telephone and get an execution report back from your broker. Back at that time, I think Brown and Company and a couple of the other ones, they catered to traders. They were the hot outfits. If you were a trader and not an investor, and you don't want to spend $300 buying 100 shares of IBM at Merrill Lynch. Well, things have come real far away over the past 5 or 6 years, especially in the past 18 months. It's just been incredible, the boom of level two trading and day trading finding the front pages in the media. Now, it's one of my least favorite places for day trading to be is on the front pages of the media. It's hard enough to succeed in what you're doing without your mother or your grandmother calling you up and asking you why you're ruining your life. My mother-in-law sends me articles cut out of the Philadelphia Inquirer, where I'm from. My wife and I are from Philadelphia. And in those articles, it's always about somebody who's just lost everything. Now, what the media doesn't understand, and I've talked to the media, I've been interviewed, I'm a background source for some Dow Jones stuff. I have, New Yorkers call me, I've got a 4 o'clock deadline, and they're chatting with you. One thing that the media doesn't understand is that day traders are not risk takers. Day traders are risk adverse. We're sissies. That's why we do what we do. If we were risk takers, we'd be putting all of our money in mutual funds and watching our Dell position go up and down 30 and 40 points and just having a heart attack while we're doing it. We are so scared and we're so risk adverse, we don't want to be in the market at the end of the day. We're afraid what might happen. We don't know exactly what it is, but we know chances are it'll be the worst case scenario and we'll get burned by it. We're so risk adverse that we think if we stay in a position longer than a few minutes, my holding period is probably about 30 to 45 minutes. That makes me a long-termer. Think if we hold on through the market through the 90-minute S&P alternation cycle, and there's a wobble in the S&P over about a 90-minute cycle, that we're going to miss our bull market, or we're going to miss our bear market, and we're going to get a swing back in the other direction. And sure enough, this is true. What we're going to talk about today is about managing opportunity, finding and locating opportunity and managing opportunity. Not everyone is succeeding using level two all by itself. Many level two traders, the ones who have come into the market using a level two background, have found that they can't just succeed by knowing where Goldman is, knowing what Merrill Lynch is doing, making a good, placing their island order and getting a fast fill. There's an awful lot more to succeeding as a trader than using a level two screen. Those of you here who have some background, have been around a few years, know that there are other ways to do things. The ones who've come in the door using level two, the past year or two are discovering the wonderful world of technical analysis, which has been around for I guess it's going to start a second century pretty soon. And they're adding TA to how they execute positions in level two. On the flip side, some of us who are the old fogies just use technical analysis exclusively. We're very, very price-driven. We're very, very number and situation-driven to where when the proper opportunity and setup comes along, when we our gun gets loaded, when we pull back that trigger, there's a time where we're going to bang in there. And we're going to bang in there using our discount broker. We're going to bang in there using whatever system's available to us. If our timing's right and we're really in sync with what we're doing, you know what, we could even call up our broker and make a day trade. It'll just be so perfect that we'll have all the dialing time planned in and the wait on the telephone planned in and the extra slippage time planned in, and then you'll just execute and you won't get any slippage. I use a discount broker and I get almost no slippage, ever. That's just a way of being in sync with the market so that when you go in, you're getting your fill where you want it, usually because nobody else wants it. That's why you get your fill when you get your fill. One of the biggest problems with technical analysis is the process of seeing. And if you hold on a second, I just have to get my glasses out here because I'm not a very good seer. If you have, like me, several computer monitors that are in front of you all day long, by the weekend, I can't see. I can't see anything less than about 4 or 5 feet in front of me. But if I go on vacation for a week, all of a sudden my eyes pop back and I could read without reading glasses. It's an amazing thing. One of the first things that's required in picking your opportunities and understanding the nature of the market is to be able to locate when there's a trade in front of you and when you're looking at nothing. It's very, very hard for people to do that, a lot of people to do that. They fail because everything looks alike to them, especially on a stock chart. All stock charts look alike, so what point am I supposed to buy, what point am I supposed to sell, and what goes on in between? They have no context in which to place their view of the stock chart. Well, you know, the futures markets over many, many years have developed an awful lot of very sophisticated ways of looking at stock charts. And if you go back to the futures market and apply it to equity trading, you discover there are many, many techniques which, number one, are highly effective, and number two, are not all that well known. And one of the greatest advantages in taking positions using some more sophisticated technical analysis techniques is you're not chasing the crowd and you're not running with the crowd. And you know what? When you don't run with the crowd, that gives you an edge in the market to start. Even if you're, you know, it's a lousy position, you're still, when the crowd is over here and you're over here, this is a good place to be. Okay? And a lot of people don't understand that. But there's a couple basics you need to pick up before you jump in and look at stock market setups. And that's all the seven bells are. And if anybody's been to the Hard Right Edge, we have on our Morning Trader page, we have seven different market setups. And I've been praised and attacked for those seven setups because they're viewed as stock picks by some people. And I'll say over and over again, no, they're not stock picks. They're stock scans. They're probability scans. They're a way of pulling out potential opportunities of the market based on certain characteristics of price movement on volume. And from these characteristics, there's a tendency for some of those stocks to do certain predictable price movements. And if you're positioned when it does that price movement, then you make money. So the seven bells, which we'll talk about, are seven opportunities. But it's really an allegory. The most successful traders using, and there we go again, sleeping. The most successful traders using the morning bells don't necessarily trade any of the market setups. What they use those setups as a way for them to start to see opportunity in the market. Now I got to back up one more. Here we go again, and I promise you I'll go faster as we go along the slides. We won't sleep as much. Before you go into the individual opportunities, you have to understand the cycle in the market. You know, the swing in the market. Now you see that if you're a level two trader, you see the swing in the market by the, you know, when the toilet gets flushed on Intel. You know what that is? When Intel breaks 55 and, you know, everybody goes, oh God, it broke 55, slam, and there's a big burst of volume that drops down a quarter of a point. That's a swing in the market. And then you wash out the sellers. Everybody goes, well, Intel doesn't look like it's falling anymore. And bam, you get people buying into it right up the middle in their ECNs, and the thing pops up to 55 and 1/8. And everybody goes, wait, I made my quarter of a point, bam, and the stock turns around and drops down. That's a swing cycle that you see on level two. Well, price has a swing cycle. And price has other cycles that you need to understand and TA in order to not get caught on the other side. For example, we'll look at two or three real simple cycles. This is the expansion-contraction cycle. And expansion-contraction is a very well-known and very accepted idea in TA where price tends to breathe. Thrusting price bars tend to be followed by contracting price bars. Contracting price bars tend to repeat themselves one after another until volatility is worked out of the system, until technical indicators, not the pattern itself, tend to move towards zero, and then as they approach zero, slam, another expansion move. Part of what we learn from everyday trading is you don't want to be in the market in contraction unless you've got some sort of spread thing going on in options, you know, some sort of, I'm options stupid, I just have to warn you, but something where you're going to make money if nothing happens. But the ability to recognize through a market pattern that contraction is about to yield to expansion is a very powerful tool. First reason why it's powerful, you have almost no risk by taking a position at that last red bar. What's your risk? If the market goes down, almost nothing. If the market goes down a quarter point, a half a point, you could be out of that trade because you go, wait a second, this thing's going in the wrong direction. Alternatively, if you take a position in one of those big green bars, well, you could be sliding up and down anywhere in that big green bar. If you buy the top of that big green bar, it drops to the bottom. You're a loser big time. And I'll just have to point out, too, there's a mix of intraday and daily charts here. I don't really differentiate all that much between the two. Stock charts are stock charts. And your ability to read them really better start. If you don't have the experience, you better start reading the longer-term ones rather than picking up 1- and 5-minute bars and trying to interpret them. Because guess what? TA's not that easy. A lot of folks who've been doing it for 6 months, a year, go, well, stock charts are real easy. You know, it's up here, here's the top over here, and here's the bottom. Well, you know, the more time you spend doing TA, the more you realize it's not that easy. You want to know why? Because Merrill and Goldman, everybody else, they have master technicians working for them who know exactly the points that you're going to buy and sell, know exactly what you're looking at, know that your sophistication in technical analysis is not all that wonderful. You know what? They're going to break a trend line just to screw your brain. They're going to go, and this happens all the time, they're going to go and take a stock to a new high for two ticks until you go, break out, baby, and then pull it right back in. Oh, gee, have you seen that a few times? And you know what? You go back to the Edwards and McGee days, and if you don't know who Edwards and McGee are, they're the Bible of TA. They wrote the early books on stock market patterns. You know, life was easy back then. Life was easier back in the days of Livermore when his idea of looking at the ticker was being in the bucket shops, and about every 10 minutes someone would post a new price, and that was the ticker back then. Well, you know what? Back then, even the New York Stock Exchange didn't have really hot technicians working for them, but everybody's got them now. TA is a very popular sport. So you have to be a little bit better. You have to know enough about technical analysis to go and be contrary very, very often. That's what makes money if you're using a level 2 screen, being contrary. You know, buying supply and selling demand. It probably works better these days, even though that's not what you get taught. The cycle of time. If you read Elder, Trading for a Living, he talks about triple screen, three trends. If you're a day trader, you can't afford not to look at a daily chart unless you're a scalper. If you're a scalper, you get away with it. Because a scalper, you're scalping maybe a 1-minute bar off a 5-minute chart. But if you're, I'm not going to call it position trading, it's holding a half-hour position day trading. I don't know what the right word is. If you're holding 15 to 30 minutes, if you want to pull out, you know, over a half a point out of the market, and I'm not talking about net stocks. You know, that's another hour of agony. But I'm talking about, you know, you're a little bit more on the conservative side. Maybe you're trading Ascend, you know, RIP, rest in peace. I'd hate to see it go. Or you're trading Qualcomm, or you're trading, you know, one of those mid-tier NASDAQ stocks. You want to take out maybe half a point, a point, point and a half. You need the daily chart. Because the daily chart is going to point to where your larger opportunities, your larger scale opportunities. Now I'm going to walk over here. I'm going to show you something about triple trend, which is just amazing. And I needed an example that worked. And this is the first chart I looked at, and it works so tremendously. You're going to see the power of technical analysis. Number one, you're looking at a daily chart of Cisco. Up here in the daily chart of Cisco is an ascending triangle, one of the classic patterns of technical analysis. Then you pull up a 5-minute chart of Cisco. And guess what you see up here in the 5-minute chart of Cisco? You see an ascending triangle. Guess what? This is Friday afternoon. This is a Friday afternoon 5-minute bar. Now, you know, Friday afternoon is a wonderful time of completion in the markets. Everybody wants to get their business done on Friday morning, on Friday afternoons. Okay, but that's not the most spectacular thing about this breakout. This breakout ran. The following Monday, the price gapped up and broke, I believe, about 15 or 20 points over the next week or two. But if you go way down on the 5-minute bar, or if you pulled up a 1-minute bar, you'll see that there's another ascending triangle. Sitting up there on the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 bars. That's all it triple screen is about. Triple screen is about coordinating your time frames so that you don't make a relativity error. Relativity error is, wow, man, I see that daily ascending triangle on Cisco, so you know what? I'm going to day trade it. And you never look at the 5-minute, and there's a little bit of wobble. You buy the opening on Cisco, maybe, and look what happens on the opening. Well, here we go again, sleeping. Working through the cycles of time in the market makes you smart. Make sure your trades are coordinated with what you're looking at. Cycles of volatility and cycles of change. And we talked about, this is very similar to the expansion-contraction cycle. The tendency towards zero, and this is stolen from Linda Bradford Rashke. This is just outright stolen from her because it's such a great point. Those are price rate of change indicators. That's how price is changing over a period of time, from 3 to 11 periods. As everything moves towards zero, everything gets very quiet, very dull. Things move into what's called the empty zone. I call it the empty zone because you know what? That's where indicators fail. And if you're an indicator-based technician, indicators have limitations because indicators all lag price. Price is the classic leading indicator. In my way of thinking, and you know, this is not a trade station way of thinking, and this is not an Omega Research way of thinking, and God bless them, it's not for everybody, it's just the way my brain works. Indicators are there to support the pattern, not the other way around. Technical analysis doesn't have to be done by rocket scientists and geophysicists, and you don't have to have a PhD in mathematics and back tests for the rest of your life in order to find the most optimum conditions for your trade based on what worked for the last 130 years. In fact, in Market Wizards, I think there was somebody who wouldn't trade gold unless he looked back at his 130 years of data on gold to make his next gold trade. Patterns will tell you what the next move is, or they will tell you what move needs to be faded. Seven bells and finding opportunity uses both sides of your brain. Patterns attack are used by the left side of your brain, and I hope I got this right. I get the left and right confused all the time. The artistic side of your brain, the side that understands proportion, the side that understands why retracements can be seen with the eye. Fibonacci proportion can be seen with the eye because it's art, it's proportion in nature. You don't even need a degree in mathematics to understand Fibonacci, but maybe somebody will tell you that you do. Because your eye will understand as a trader how far price should pull back, but you look at it and go, wait, that looks about right. Of course it is. The cycle of trend and countertrend. I bet this messed you up a few times. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Einstein applied to day trading. It was Einstein, wasn't it? No, it was Newton, maybe. One of them. For every impulse in the market, there's a counter impulse. It's not rocket science. Again, it's because, you know, there's a few reasons why price pulls back. You know, if there's a big breakout, you could be the conspiracy theorist. Price pulls back so that the insiders who missed it the first time around could get on board, you know. I personally like the market maker conspiracy theory of, you know, they're just trying to shake out volume and they know they're going to scare the hell out of people by dropping a breakout the next day or by running a stock for a long time and just making a correction on it last forever. They know how to burn you. The trend counter trend cycle goes on continuously in all time frames. And if you're positioned wrong within that, and it also is on the buy and sell of level two screen, then you're not working with conditions of the market. Of course, the hard part is the best conditions come when the cycle is counter and about to turn. And it's also the hardest time to act because you've got very little verification for what you want to accomplish. But that's where the best trades are. Best trades hurt the most. Trend range cycle. It's not quite the same thing as a trend counter trend cycle. Trend range means that rate of change increases, price changes levels. It seeks levels, and when it gets to it, it'll stop and condense and stay that way. Now, the best money is in the up and down green ones. That's the best money. And there's no difference between this. This is, what, a 15-minute on Cisco? There's no difference between this and a monthly for your 401k. There's no difference. Price will breathe, inhale and exhale. Seven Bells. I started the Seven Bells with a dip chip, which used to be called the Rubber Ducky back when I was just doing it for myself, because it's the trade I make. It's my bread and butter trade. I usually trade it on an intraday. Not even the stuff that shows up in my scans. I don't have the patience to trade many of the stocks that are listed in the scans that I do every day for Morning Trader. I don't have the patience for it because they require 1 or 2 days or 3 days, and God Almighty, you know, that's forever. You know, I hate to say it, but I, again, going back to the idea that opportunity exists in all time frames, these are to set up archetypes in your brain, a way of starting to see the market that allows you to instantaneously, you don't want to have time for analysis. You don't have time to go pull out a book and let me see what Edwards and McGee say about this, you know. You don't have time to go, well, this is a symmetrical triangle. What does it mean? You want a series of events to take place that intuitively tell you, 1, 2, 3, 4, you're there, you can act. And again, very, very quickly, because the late comer loses the loses the gifts. The gifts are gone by the time the late comers show up. All a dip chip is a counter trend move in a very strong trend. Preferably, I like parabolic. The counter trend move doesn't want to be a backbreaker. In other words, you have to be very careful about trading gap downs, which is another trade in here you'll see. Gapping off of a parabolic high or gapping up from a parabolic low. We're just looking at it on the long side, but there's absolutely no reason it doesn't work on the downside as well, on the short side. All a dip trip is knowing how far price will pull back before that rubber ducky is let go and pops back above the water. Now, I call it a rubber ducky because I don't have any faith that rubber ducky is going to hit the ceiling. Jabil's the next slide. In Broad Vision, which I traded back about 2 or 3 years ago, price failed at 20 and then rolled over again. You're actually trading, if you know anything about Elliott, and I'm a seat of the pants Elliott person. I'm not a real intense Elliott person. You're trading a B wave in an ABC correction. And the market's moving ABCs all the time. You know, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, ABC, over and over again. I'm using a Fibonacci grid, and Fibonacci grids are very, very easy. If you have them, in Realtek, you know, get one out and use it sometime. Try it in your supercharts, your trade station, or whatever. Fibonacci is not rocket science. I'll give you everything you need to know about Fibonacci in about 2 sentences, and let me just go over and point to it. Forget about all the in-between numbers. These are the only 3 numbers you care about. And you're done. You find your length on Fibonacci by looking at any direct trend move. Find your double bottom. Find something that's a clear top. And how do you find a clear top? Well, you know, you get dark cloud cover, you know. You get a doji or a hammer popping in there at the top. Lay a grid over it. Now, in itself, it's very two-dimensional. But this is actually called, this is a 3862 trade. And this one is just a dandy. I hate to tell you, but you can make a lot of money on this trade. And this trade comes up over and over and over again in clean markets. Very hard to find on intraday charts, though, because using Fibonacci on intraday charts is very tough to do. Okay, it is tough to do because a tick or two in either direction screws your numbers up. So, you know, maybe on a 15-minute or a 1 hour, you might want to try it. But I find day trades using daily Fibonacci. Again, so that's a point that needs to be made. 3862, because there's really 2 different trends here. Let me just point them out so you see them. Here's one trend. Starts here, and that was the low. I can't show you the back days. Goes up to the same point. Then there's another wiggle right there that starts as the second one. This line didn't exist really at that point, except as an extension. Yeah, you need 3 points to make a trend line. You can't do them with 2 because you can extend any 2 points out. But look what happened. When you extend a smaller Fibonacci grid over a larger Fibonacci grid, and they correspond, they line up, you get convergence. And going back, a classic TA idea, convergence, divergence, where 38% of one Fibonacci lines up with the 62% of the next one, And then add to that two or three or four other forms of cross-verification. And cross-verification is something that we teach in our course. Cross-verification is seeing the same damn thing over and over again in discontinuous ways. Discontinuous means, a moving average and MACD work the same way. You can't use them to verify each other. You need different ways of seeing the same thing. You use patterns, time. There's lots of ways to do cross-verification. What's our cross-verification here? A gap support? There's double gap support. Maybe you just see one gap. That's why I love candlesticks. But there's another gap here. See this thing? This is a gap up here. That's a hidden gap. And it's one thing about candles. Candles help you see hidden gaps. Yeah, it was an exhaustion gap. The gap got closed then. But you know what? Once that gap's popped, it still represents... it represents a trend mirror. It represents a point in price that price will remember as it returns to it. I say I trade off of a daily chart and trade intraday off a daily chart. Here's an excellent dip trip trade on GeoCities, and I believe this is in January. Now, what were the circumstances on the daily? You had a I guess you'd call that, it's sort of like a symmetrical triangle or a double top breakout. You had just a tremendous gap. A gap like that should hold. There's absolutely no reason a gap like that won't hold. You hear so much, gaps get filled. Well, guess what? Not all of them get filled. I think you'll find one on Intel back about 8 years ago that it never looked back from. Not all gaps get filled. Gaps, in fact, the first time price returns into anything except for an exhaustion gap, represent very powerful support. And, in fact, the closer it gets to the fill point, the more risk-reward improves in your favor. There's another form of support there. We call it whole number support. See that number 80? Whole numbers in the markets most times represent support. For some reason, people like to swing off of whole numbers. Oh, you get 100. You get when Intel did 100. Or when Cisco does 100. Look what happens when Dell did 100. The way price, it won't necessarily break through, it'll swing off it. Ascended 50. If you spend any time with Ascended 50, you knew what a bear that was. And we have there's a picture of this thing coming up. So I have that. The market opens, and this is the typical time. This is actually converted to New York time. Okay. You've got your time. I think this is 8 o'clock in the morning for me and 7 o'clock in the morning for you. The market opens up and it immediately drops in what I call the 8 a.m. low because I live in Denver. Now, why do the insiders take stocks that the prior day was, I get my position, the prior day was, I think it closed right at 100. I'll get my numbers straight here. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, the prior day closed at about 90 or 85. Yeah, that's right. But it had rallied just a little bit before. Price opens up and just drops like a rock into the gap. This is a time-based trade. I wait for 8 o'clock. I wait for the first half hour on these things. This thing drops into this little triangle here. Rectangle. It's early. How do you get this? This is a rectangle, okay? I call that the action zone. That's where the night before, hopefully, you knew, damn, if this stock just drops another 6 or 8 points that was about 6 or 8 points or more, and drops down to 80 and starts to hit the top of that support, guess what's going to happen? I got to be ready. So you have it on your time and sales or your tickers, and you have it with 20 or 30 other things. You're not paying attention until you see the red start to increase. And when that thing starts to drop towards 80, that's to wake you up. When it gets down to 81, 82, you've already said, when this thing gets down to 81 and 82, I'm going to put some other stuff aside and just watch it. And if it hits my number, I'm gone if the time is right, if the conditions are right. And those conditions and time are different for everybody. What'd you get out of this thing? It was a V-bottom. It was just absolutely gorgeous. And this is not cherry-picked. I traded this on Ciena 2 weeks ago. I traded this on Intel on a gap down a week ago or 10 days ago. And it's a very high percentage trade if you're patient. You don't want to buy this thing at 90 and ride it down to 80 and back up. It's very high percentage trade because guess what? There's multiple levels of support sitting there for your price. Sometimes dip trips are really the first phase of the next move. I'm not smart enough to know when that is, so I'll usually take my money and go. Jabil, which was one of my... I just loved Jabil when it was on NASDAQ. It's not the same animal. It's like when iOmega went from NASDAQ to the New York Stock Exchange. Jabil was just a wonderful stock to trade. And you're better off, you get the more dynamic moves early in the trend. As you know, in looking at the markets, the more trends endure, the more troublesome they become and the trickier they become to make money, because later in trends, everybody's trying to shake you out of your position, so there's a lot of false moves in the opposite direction. This, again, is another 38 trade. I don't have a 62 on this, but what I do have are the short-term moving averages. I think that's a 13 and 18-day moving average that price returns to. And guess what? You've got another gap, and you also have top support right there, the dip trip. Time absorbs price. Time absorbs volatility. The problem with dip trips is if price goes down to your number and sits there too long, it may not have a lot of bounce to it. Price can get to a certain place in a different period of time. The faster it gets there, the faster it's going to get out of there. If it takes its time wobbling down into price, well, you know what? There's a lot of that volatility is going to be absorbed, and a lot of the sellers or the buyers that needed to be shaken out is getting absorbed out of the system. So when it gets down there, it may not have the momentum on the upside that you'll either get bored or you may even lose some money on a wiggle. A good example of that was Vizix. If anybody saw what Vizix was doing in the past couple of weeks, it was added to the S&P 500. It popped to a new high. Had a real nice breakout, high volume, dropped back down to the gap breakout, and just for about 7 or 10 days, just went sideways. Did absolutely nothing. Finally said, oh, okay, I'm done. Bang. Now, if you're patient, that's a play you can make. It's a position trade you can make. But even on day charts, you've got to look at the amount of time it takes for price to get to a certain point. Power spikes are volume-driven information. Power spikes are not so much trades as they are alarms to tell you when an event has taken place that you need to prepare a strategy on. What's a good example? Was it, I'm not sure, MCOM? Was it Metrocom in the past week? When Ashton Technology broke out, you get situations where there's just a huge, tremendous increase in volume. That tremendous increase in volume, registered by perhaps 3 or 4 times the average daily volume on a single day event, perhaps multiple days at 2x volume, 2.5x volume. It sounds real mundane, but I'll tell you what, people don't know what to do with volume. People are basically volume deficient when it comes to traders. They don't know what to do with it. They misinterpret it. Volume's the crowd, but the crowd's not necessarily who you want to be with, so you may go and chase the crowd, and it may not be the thing to do. That's one of the reasons why, this isn't exactly the day I'd want to buy Navarre, when you get just a huge smokestack like that. The crowd that got in, boy, I bet they thought something was going on. And there were probably people on the Yahoo boards that night going, well, man, did you see this thing? It did 30 million shares. Or, you know, my God, tomorrow it's going to do 50 million. No, it was an exhaustion move. One of the things you see in volume is a blowout. It's a blowout of taking all the people who are even interested in that stock out of the market and giving them position. And guess what? By the next morning, they're all losers. Yeah, why is something like this a top? Because you know how many losers you got the next day? No, they didn't day trade the stock. You know, the smart ones day trade. You know, how many day traders became investors on their Yahoo or their on sale over from April to June? I mean, get real, you know. Get real. They became true believers until, you know, and the margin call came. You know, the bottom line is there were day traders as long as stocks were going up and they're making money, and they became investors when the stock started going down. And God bless it, too. It's real, you know, it's really shaking out a lot. I mean, I'm real happy about the past couple months. I don't know about you, but I made money in April, May, and June. And I made it on the long side because that's my environment. I love when things are just sort of gray and yucky, you know. That's why I think I can live in Seattle because it's kind of rainy and cloudy. I mean, that's the conditions I like best. Volume spikes. Volume, strong volume represents, let's get real logical, it represents tops, bottoms, breakouts, or swivel points, pivot points. It's real important to know which is which, and if you can identify which, you can prepare strategies that are based on your recognition. The Ascend 50 line, okay, here's the Ascend 50 line. Now, what happened on this day? Right there. Something happened on that day. That was a power slide. Does anybody know their Ascend history? Oh, well, it was one of my favorite stocks, at least. They were added to the S&P 500, just like Vizix. And not much happened that day, except there's a tremendous increase in volume. It wasn't a real wide expansion day. But take a look at what happened to 50 over the next 5 months. Every time price approached 50, it became a swivel point. And something I call it my side, I call it psychotic trend lines. That you've got a horizontal line could be a trend line in its way. A psychotic trend line is one that doesn't hold price or doesn't resist price. It's one that maybe resists it the first time, pops through, then it supports it the first time it pops through, and you actually get this with a center axis going up or going down over time. Pivot points are very poorly understood in TA. Pivot points help you define swing trade entries and swing trade exits. And it's a real pretty simple process. You know, you pretty much expect it to hold the first time and expect it to fail the second, and vice versa, okay, from top or from bottom. And that's good because if it holds it the first time and you're not positioned, breaks it the second time, that's a breakout or that's a breakdown, and you can act on that. Pivot points. Anyway, they're hot spots, and all the volume helped, you know, where people are positioned, that's where the action is. That's where people buy and sell. If somebody somebody asked me about a month ago, I think it was somebody who worked for Intel, one of the students in my course, and they work for Intel. They own a lot of Intel, and that Intel's done pretty damn good for them over the years. They're a pretty long-term employee up in Oregon, I believe. And price approached resistance, and I think it was the last short-term high in mid-60s, somewhere in that, before this recent breakout and swivel. And apparently two analysts had downgraded Intel just on exactly the same day as it hit that resistance point, and Intel dropped like 3 points. And the guy's going to me, goes, well, what's with this timing? Why did the analyst downgrade Intel at exactly the same time it was hitting its resistance point? It's manipulation. It's conspiracy. And I replied to him. I said, it's not conspiracy. The resistance points, the support points, are where the bigger players are positioned. And that's where they're going to be looking at that stock. That's where analysts for these houses have a lot of institutional players positioned with these stocks, and they're going to make their calls because people are going, what should I do here? So all of a sudden, when things hit support and resistance point, you get analyst upgrades and downgrades. It's because that's where they're interested in the stock, not from a TA basis, but because that's where their players are positioned. So, I mean, it's not voodoo. That part's not voodoo. Some of TA is voodoo, and God bless it. I hope it never changes. Voodoo is a good thing. Volume on intraday, just a quick word about that. Most of the times, my opinion, and you can do what you want, it's your money. Most of the time, ignore it, especially volume indicators. Don't try to use OBV, unbalanced volume, or accumulation distribution on an intraday chart. You got a big problem. That's called the first and the last hour. That's where everything is. It's going to screw up all of your readings. Yeah, your accumulation is going to, oh, my accumulation's really slowed down after the first 90 minutes. Well, yeah, duh, you know? It is. I mean, that's what's going to happen. If you have a real liquid stocks, if you got Microsoft or Dell or something like that, you can read volume spikes intraday. You can read the little changes to help you find support, help you find resistance during the course of the day. And a lot of that's meaningful, but you've got to use it on a relative basis. You can't go, oh, well, let me see, that 2 o'clock breakout's not as good as the one at 9 because there's not as much volume, or 9:30 is there's not as much volume. There's always going to be more volume at the beginning and the end of the day. Don't burn yourself by using too much volume. When I was with Mark yesterday, he asked me, okay, what kind of volume indicator do you want on the 5-minute chart? And I said, I don't want any. I don't use it. I don't use it on intraday charts. I use the pattern, period. It's not reliable. And especially if some of you out there trading esoteric New York Stock Exchange stocks, like myself, who still enjoy that, you get the way they block trade report on the NYSE. You don't get real information. Yeah, sure, you'll get spikes and stuff, but it's not real. It's late report, ASIC report stuff, late all the time. It's ridiculous. I mean, Mark, yesterday, I spent the day, was going. He'd look at a late print and he'd go, criminal, because they're supposed to report it in, 30 seconds, and you can see some of these things were out of the bid-ask, they're out of the spread, 15, 20, 30,000 shares, and it's late. And if you're making a decision, it's getting printed on your 5-minute van. It don't care. Just a real quick thing about the silent alarm. And these are real rare. Somebody asked me for example, and I had to give it a description because I can't find an example, even though I've seen them in the past. But if you see them, pay attention. And a silent alarm is when you get a tremendous burst in volume, and there's no reason for it, and there's no range for it. In other words, the stock isn't moving, price isn't moving. Nothing breaks out, nothing breaks down. It's an ordinary day except for the fact it went through the roof. There's no secondary offering. No one's converting shares, and none of that going on. You got to check it out. Something's going on. And a real simple play on that thing is just, if it goes up the next day, buy it. If it goes down, sell it. You know, somebody is doing something, and they can't hide it because it's gone through the roof. And you know what? Price is going to follow those big players. It's not going to follow you, Joe Blow, or Susie Blow, on your 1,000 share or your 500 share entry or exit. It's going to follow the big money. The finger finder, which used to be called the Farley finger finder. So I made it more generic. It's no longer the Farley finger finder. It's just a finger finder. This approaches the subject of candlesticks and how you use candlesticks, or if you use candlesticks. A lot of folks stay away from candlesticks because they think they're complicated. Candlesticks aren't complicated. They're the way everybody should be using price bars, period. I don't use anything else. That doesn't mean that I'm smarter than you. It's just there's not enough information on a regular price bar. Candlesticks give you so much more because they give you acceleration direction in a way that a price bar can't, that little ticks on a price bar can't. The finger finder looks for dojis and hammers. That's really all it does. Now, what makes a doji and hammer special? It really, dojis and hammers, which I guess I need to define for you, that's a doji. A doji is when price opens and closes at the same time, but the daily range is much higher than normal on average. And so you get this big spike. And in fact, let me move ahead to show you a hammer. A hammer is where price closes close to opening price, and you get a long shadow or a long range day. It doesn't matter whether the opening's higher than the closing or the closing's higher than the opening. I hope that was different, yeah. The important thing about dojis and hammers is not what you read in Nissan, not what you read in Morris. If you've read the books on Japanese candlesticks, there's a big problem with them. There's a big problem with them. They tell you the same thing on every damn one. Well, you know, this Harami over here is bearish. And, you know, this dark cloud cover is bearish. And this rising, this morning star is bullish. Well, duh, you know, again, what good is that information for you? Why is it? What makes it different? What makes dark cloud cover different from a Harami or a tweezer squeezer or something like that? You know, what makes it different? And the bottom line is the importance of candlesticks really has very little to do with the pattern itself, has a lot to do with where the pattern happens. When the patterns happen at the extreme of trends, they're much more valuable than they are in the middle. With a couple exceptions, you'll see in ranges, and this is a class, you'll see it over and over again. You'll see in ranges where price just stays between point A and point B for a period of time, and then you'll get a bang down and a bang back up. Now, what do you think that bang down and bang back up is? And you get a doji or a hammer, and price closes back up in the range. Doesn't take a brain surgeon. You've got some real bored market makers who are trying to clean out the stops. And when a range develops over a period of time, stops start building right under the previous lows. And it's not an indication the stock's gone anywhere right away. It's an indication of boredom. It's an indication that, well, geez, I got no volume here, but there are all those stops down there. I want them. And so, you know, about lunchtime one day, they go down and get them. And vice versa, you know, sometimes you get them on top. Generally speaking, whatever direction they blow out the stops, the range is going to break out in the opposite direction. Okay? Because they're telling you, you know, if they blow out the stops in that direction, they can't use those stops to trigger a sell-off later. They've taken them out. But they still got all those stops above them. And if they want to trigger a breakout, they go, well, we know we got volume up here. They generally won't break it, you know, in a range that doesn't become a nightmare forever. They'll break it in one direction. They'll squeeze the stops in one direction, then break it out in the other direction. Finding your strategy with dojis and hammers and everything else on intraday, on dailies. Just to show you first, I believe, that very often dojis and hammers are valuable on liquid intraday charts. If you try using them on thin stocks, you're going to get 50 doges in a day. That's not what their purpose is. On liquid stocks, in conjunction with other information, doges and hammers have good information. On stocks that trade 16ths, you're not going to get big, wide ranges in a five-minute period unless something's happening. But the important thing, and let me see if I have a... I don't have another daily on fingers and hammers. And there's a real important point about them in terms of finding a strategy for them. If you drop down one time level from a daily hammer or a daily doji, very often you're getting a V bottom or a V top. You're getting a major reversal in the time frame that's next lower down from the one you're looking at. And that gives you a tremendous amount of information in terms of planning for a double bottom, a double top, or even a breakout sometimes, because when a decent hammer gets taken out, price usually runs because, you know, it's a breakout or a breakdown. It's a double top or a double bottom break at that point. But it's very good to plan trades in the opposite direction when you see an extended doji or hammer. After a test, and very often there is a test, but using the next time frame lower, you can plan out where your timing is. Coiled springs, we talked about contraction and expansion. Another idea stolen word for word from the futures market. Tony Crable's book, Short-Term Price Patterns, on short-term price patterns, written in about 8 or 9 years ago. And he does a tremendous amount of testing on the S&P futures on what happens when price contracts for a 7-day period so that the bar you're looking at is the narrowest range bar of the last 7 periods. What happens on the 8th bar? And whether it pays to follow price or to fade price out from the extensions, the high and low of the coil. Very often, coiled springs in the equities markets won't lead to immediate breakouts, but they will lead to an expansion in the direction that that price moves out of the range. Now, just to explain that, these two bars. This is the narrowest range in the past 7 days. Actually, I believe in this case, this is the narrowest range in the past 7 days, and this is still the narrowest range in the past 7 days, if you can understand that. I use, in fact, for my own trading, something called an NR7 plus 1. When you see, essentially, it's an NR8, but NR7 is a standard in the futures markets. That has a much greater potential of yielding a sharp expanding move out of a range. Now, is it any NR7? No, I think you'll find that what you're looking for is, let me give you an analogy, symmetrical triangle. You're looking for the analogy of the symmetrical triangle. If you know what a symmetrical triangle looks like, it's that, right? Comes out to an apex, comes out to a point. You're looking for first a trend, and the trend's being corrected by a lot of this. The action gets dull. Things get quiet. You don't want it to get too quiet. You still need, the fire's got to burn here. Things tighten out. Right in the middle of congestion is really the best spot very often. And when they start to move, chances are that it will pick up momentum. That you're looking at a low momentum, low volatility point that will be exchanged for a high momentum, high volatility point. Now, there are variations on the theme, and certainly at the Hard Right Edge and Morning Trader, not all coiled springs work. And one of the biggest misconceptions, a coiled spring has about a 50-50 chance of breaking out in either direction on average. Now, you go, well, how can you make a pick based on it? Well, it's real simple. Watch which way it breaks out and go with the flow. I mean, you're traders, right? Investors hate this trick. They hate me for it. I get ripped apart on Yahoo for this trade. Because I go, well, man, I saw that coiled spring, and 2 months later, my stock was down. It's not, you know, you're going to lose on that kind of, on that level. It's not meant to look at the market a week or 10 days. It's meant to say, well, here, this is where the next move out's going to be. Again, this points to the expansion, taking the first direction out. Higher range, low for the day, a little bit higher than prior low, hits that point, goes. Prior range, opening, and high for the day, never makes it to that point, hits that point, goes. Same thing over there. Does it work all the time? No. But what's the advantage of this trade? The same advantage that we mentioned before, there's no risk. You got very little risk. Because, gee, it goes a tick against yesterday's lower high and then fades it and goes in the other direction, you're out. Experienced traders manage risk. Inexperienced traders chase gain. Period. Intel breakout. And this is another way you see a flag, counter trend flag, where the NR7 is right at the end of a pullback that doesn't break support. Once support's broken, your odds of that thing, once it breaks support, your odds increase that the move will be reversed. I also like this thing on Intel, and let's take a peek here, and I'll be right with you. Okay. I like this thing on Intel because it points out something else that we use tremendously at the hard edge, and how when your eyes are trained, you can see these things. That little move down on Intel, I believe, is also a five-wave decline, if you look at it on a five-minute bar. Now, if you don't know what a five-wave decline is, you really should. Five-wave declines are an archetype of movement in the markets you'll see over and over and over again, and they signify the end of downtrends when that trend line is broken, and you'll see them on monthlies, you'll see them on minute bars. I traded one on IBM on Thursday afternoon, and guess what? It gapped that point on my five-minute bar exactly the time that the Dow popped back above 10.5, and that was only, for me, that was the only good rally of the day. The market was moving in the opposite direction. They're there all the time. And the joy of it, I mean, five-wave declines, the bottom of a five-wave decline is where the double bottom forms. Using intraday for coiled springs, I don't recommend it. I don't recommend it as a science. It's a fairly good art. In other words, you, again, we're talking about issues that are much broader on using these things, not as hard and fast rules, but becoming flexible and original as a trader, understanding the nature of contraction, and eyeballing contraction to go, well, things have really contracted, we're going to get a breakout. Maybe if you count, maybe it's an NR6. Maybe there's been, maybe there was one false breakout before, so this bar doesn't even count, but this is a real narrow bar. But it's right at the support, it's right at resistance, it's right where you expect something to break out or break down. And you could use that information to take a position within the congestion that has low risk but very high reward, because if you get an expansion bar, you'd be talking risking an eighth of a point for a two-point move. That's a 16 to 1. Is that my brain here? That's, yeah, that is 16 to 1. That's pretty damn good. That's pretty damn good. Yeah, I'll take that. I'll take 16 to 1 any day. The bear hug. Oh, you know, you talk about short selling, but most of you are lousy short sellers. You know, the easiest system, if you're not using, this is a real advantage of direct trading. If you're not using an ECN-based system, if you're not using MB or whoever, you probably shouldn't be short selling on an intraday basis. I mean, you need the inventory of a Southwest Securities or somebody else in order to be able to get in and out real fast. There's so many games played in trying to short intraday through discount brokers. I don't recommend it. You're just not going to get filled. If you get filled, it's bad news. Okay? You don't want to get filled because that means you're wrong, which is really that messed your brain up right there, you know? But if you have a fast system, you could sell short quickly using, you know, real tick front end, whatever. Then short selling should be done as often as buying long. It's a much simpler process. Again, if you're able to do that. And I don't short as much as I want to. I'm forced to, in the way I do things, to have a much longer time frame for my shorts. And I don't like doing that. I'd rather be a hardcore day trader and not hold things all day or not hold things overnight. Especially on a short sale. I don't want to hold a short sale overnight. But you know what? The discount brokers make you do that. They won't. You know, you could try to short 100 shares of General Electric and not get filled, even though it's doing 15 minutes of upticks. And you're going, well, where's that at? You know? But you're not going to get that on real tick. But if you do short sell, now that the disclaimer's out of the way, you know, there's a couple points to short selling. Number one, without a doubt, and again, I'm not a momentum trader. I hate momentum. Momentum kills. Ugly, ugly. Short strength on short weakness. Does that To me, it makes perfect sense. Maybe it sounds real stupid to you. But number one, you get less upticks when things are dropping like a rock. Number two, where's your exit? When something's dropping like a rock, where are you going to find out you're wrong? Number three, quick declines are usually followed by nasty short squeezes. And you know what? You're going to get major slippage trying to cover in a major short squeeze because they know they got you pegged. You're there. You're burned. You're history. You know, you'll be at the end of the trade, you're toast because they know. And how many times do you see it? If you use Bollinger Bands in your trading wear, or even on bars, you get a big expansion bar followed by a reversal bar in exactly the opposite direction. And, of course, that's that expansion bar, that big drop that attracted you and said, yeah, I got to get in. And then you're burned. So anyway, short strength. How do you find strength? You find strength at resistance. Strength that moves into a spot it should not exceed, so that if it does exceed it, you know you're wrong. Points like that, the more original the points, the better off you are, because the insiders, the market makers, and specialists aren't going to see you as well. Parallel price channels, they don't see very well. I just don't think that the insiders see parallel price channels. Especially on this one, it's drawn on a logarithmic chart. You know, parallel price channels form on both logarithm and arithmetic charts on simple math charts. And if you find them, you're going to find resistance at the top of the channel, even if it isn't a point that makes any sense. And that's the cool part. It's yours. You own it. So you might be able to use it. Oh, this is one of my favorite stocks. This is just one of the greatest fundamental stories of the 1990s, Advanced Micro Device. I was sarcastic. I don't know if you know, but they just warned this week for the sixth time in six quarters. What a disaster. That's why you buy Intel, sell AMD. Buy Intel, sell AMD. Yeah, the K7 is the salvation now. Real simple, and it doesn't take a brain surgeon. Again, back to one of my favorite stocks, Ascend. When Ascend was in its bear market, all you're doing is selling resistance. Let me point out a couple points. It's just flipping upside down. Double bottom, breakdown, gap gets filled right there. Oh, gee, don't want to knock this over. Okay, another gap down. Price moves up into the gap, double top. Another gap down, price moves up to the top of the gap and goes. No gap down, but we'll take it. Prior low gets taken out. It was so sweet. They're not all this sweet. But boy, it sure makes it simple when you see something like that. It sure looks real easy when something like that happens, where the bottom just drops out over and over and over again. And you know what? All those retracements took place according to Fibonacci moves. You'll see there was 38s and 50s and 62% all throughout that move. So you're shorting strength, you're not shorting weakness. Same thing on an intraday. Do you buy or sell? When price moves up into a former high for the first time on your 5-minute bar, are you buying it or are you selling it? Okay? I would never, ever buy it. I consider selling it. I never, ever buy the first test of a new high or sell the first test of a new low. Never. Because number one, you've got sellers waiting for you. Somebody's going to want to short it at the double top point. So you've got sellers coming in. Now, what would I do the third time around? Well, that's actually one of the trades, so we'll wait for just about 5 minutes and I'll show it to you. Original trend lines. The more original your point of view of where support and resistance is, the better your position will work for you. Intraday charts set up a lot of viable, real trend lines that maybe not everybody sees. But you know what? If you find it, somebody else found it as well. So you've got folks who are supporting your position, whatever it is. You know, you're never in a vacuum. You know, whatever you see, somebody else sees. A lot of other people see. If it's real obvious, you know, if it's a head and shoulders breakdown, like the entire universe sees it, you know, and they're going to probably fade you and that stock's going to go straight up. But the more original your trend lines are, the less false breakouts you'll get or breakdowns you'll get, because there's just enough people to push it in the right direction. You're working under the radar of the market. The market makers don't even see it. So I use, on my intradays, you find all the trend lines you can. It breaks the trend lines. A good place to stand are short sales. They carry. A lot of them carry real, real well. That first one, that says one-day support up there. And you'll see this on dailies all the time. And I think there's one more This is another trend line break. I'm going to move ahead and show you one more chart in respect to that. I want to make sure it's here before I flip it. There it is. I got this idea from Gary Smith at thestreet.com because I was confused about short selling, and it's called the groggy rise. The price is counter trend rallying into a point, but it doesn't have a lot of pizzazz, and volume's fading. And no one seems real interested, but you know, you're afraid the stock's going to go up. But that can only carry so far. That groggy rise often leads to a very dramatic sell-off. Now, a couple other points about that spot. That's an NR7 also. It didn't do you much good if you were in position the day before that gap. That still breaks my heart because I thought it was going to... I wanted that stock. I wanted to sell that stock so bad. And this was because it was the second in the series. I think that stock had already been up higher than that point, or maybe there was another break after that. But you look for that trend line, and very often you'll see that gradual trend line break on not too much volume and not too much energy, and it'll almost look like a false one, and it'll just start gathering acceleration to the downside. And you'll see those sloppy, lazy trend lines over and over. Hole in the wall. Hole in the wall. We're just going to talk about this on the long side. When a stock has a strong, strong rally, and it could be a rally in almost any time frame, and you'll see this on intradays as well, and then turns around and gaps down. You can look at Edwards and McGee all you want, you're not going to find it. It's not there. So I call it the hole in the wall, so it's mine. I own it. I'm going to get copyright on it. Actually, I thought I owned it, and then I saw that Oliver in Pristine, who you folks are going to see in a couple weeks, based a great intraday trade on it. It's his latest article, and it's a hole in the wall. And I went, well, I didn't invent it. He didn't invent it. It's been there. Just got to know where to find it. Not all hole in the walls are created equally. You can say the CompUSA is approaching bankruptcy now, but this is a couple years ago, so it rallied after that. But the stronger the gap down and the higher the volume, the more of a true hole in the wall you have. I've seen some whipsaw develop where, yeah, the trend's over. It's not going to get any higher, but it'll wobble through there. So you want a good, strong break. And sometimes stay away from commodities. Forget about ADRs. They'll give you false readings for all that stuff, the stuff that gaps every day, you know, Ericsson, you know, that kind of thing. But when you see it and you see it on volume, number one, whatever you do, don't sell it short when you see it because chances are you've got blowout volume on that and that thing at least wants to try to go a little higher first. You want to buy it when it pulls up into the gap and fails. You want to sell it when it pulls up into the gap and fails. It's a short sale. And you'll see, again, Pristine's got a great strategy. If you get up in the morning and see it, and I think I've got one intraday here. Yeah, it's on Medtronics on a 15-minute bar. Now, I would never have made this trade because it never went up after it broke. But why do you see this trade more on intraday than you do on a daily? Because there's more gapping that takes place. You know, if you have, after a rally, you very often get a gap down the next morning. And that gap down is a hole in the wall. And you got plenty of time. If the gap gets filled in the first hour, you know to stay away. And when you get a gap in the morning, you're like everyone else, you're looking at the first hour to see what it does. At the end of the hour, if it hasn't filled the gap, probably it's not going to that day. The odds have shifted to your favor. You can see what it does in the gap. This thing, that was a 15-minute bar, so that's about three hours of action there. I mean, it never even approached the gap again. It just went. Using Fibonacci with holes in the wall. Consider the first move down as an A wave if you want to. I'm just translating for Elliot folks here. Correction, ABC, 1, 2, 3. First wave down. When you know that move's complete, you can lay a Fibonacci grid over it. And any retracement shouldn't exceed 62% if the trend is going to remain intact. A move that exceeds 62% changes the trend. That's how I look at bulls and bears. If I see a break of 62%, the trend in that time frame is done for me. And I expect 100% retracement. Remember, it may only be a reversal in that smaller time frame. You may not get it in the larger, but it may represent something larger. So a trend shouldn't exceed 62%. And you could actually pivot off that point in terms of, see, you find yourself a safe short sale entry. And Fibonacci actually gives you a price to do it. You got a couple gaps to play with. It never reached the original hole in the wall, but take a look at that continuation gap on the way up in red. It's kind of hard to read. Once a continuation gap is taken out, it becomes resistance. I call those gap echoes. HRE Classic, which is the seventh bell, lifted from Gary Smith of TheStreet.com. And I'm a Street.com fan. I'm a Kramer fan. He keeps me smart in fundamental ways, ways that I would never think of. He's not a technician, but he's counterintuitive, and that's why I like him. His writers will go and think one way, but he'll go and say what's on his mind, so I find him very valuable. But Gary's been writing for TheStreet.com for several years now, and he's got something called the GBS Classic. We've converted it over to the HRE Classic, and guess what? Gary didn't invent anything either, because all it really is a cup and handle breakout. So you got to go back to William O'Neill, who didn't invent it either. But go back to the idea about what do you do when stock goes and tests a high for the first time. I don't buy it. I expect sellers to come in, and guess what? They usually do. But what do I do the third time? I watch. Third high gets taken out. Price goes up, and you'll see it's about 2 o'clock in the afternoon on 5-minute bars all the time. It's a great time to buy. After the pullback, after the double top. And that's all this really is. You get congestion to 3 points. In this case, you have congestion before the prior highs. You could get congestion at the prior highs, or you could get congestion above the prior highs. That's the nature of how a cup and handle works. Here's something you could trade. You trade fairly often. This is, I didn't put the name of this stock on here. I wonder what stock that is. No, data broadcasting. It's a signal. This is a signal chart. I was talking about the 2 or 3 o'clock cup and handle, and here's the 2 or 3 o'clock cup and handle. I was thinking maybe it was iBeam, but iBeam didn't get up to 130. Oh, I know. I think it's Cisco the day before the split. I think that's what it is. And I trade this point, or see that point? And you can't see it, but that point right at 3 o'clock all the time. You can find your entry point on a 1 minute. Okay, those are the seven bells, and I just want to finish up with some points about execution. Your concentration, your attention, those of us who trade at home all day, it's a real boring existence. If you're not trading real tick and you're not making 150 entries and exits a day, which I don't, God almighty, stop me if I ever did that. Your attention can start to waver. You don't know what you want to look at. Many Monday mornings, you just get frustrated because you're going, this is going to be a lousy week, man. It's 11 o'clock, nothing's happening. And then all of a sudden, that's when you miss the trade because you weren't paying attention. You need a sequence of events in your brain to get you ready for your trades. Part of that is the setup. Part of that is preparation and knowing, okay, where the numbers are important. If this stock hits this number, I got to be watching. Well, on an intraday basis, one of the things that I use personally are 5/8/13 Bollinger Bands. And that's one of the things that we teach in our course, so that's free for you today, just for me being in California. I love 5/8/13 Bollinger Bands on 5-minute charts. Use the 5 as a strong trend, the 8 as an intermediate trend, and your 13 as your long-term trend. And guess what? It breaks it. That's your quote-unquote bear market, and that's your weak side. And using the Bollinger Bands to tell me whether a position 45 minutes in is going to break out or not. I could count the bars and know by the 10th to the 13th bar, if price is moving sideways, those bands are contract, and price is not going to go anywhere. And that just happens to correspond with the way first hour action works a lot of times. You want to read the market hour to hour each day and pay attention when opportunity comes to you, because you don't know when the next one's going to come. First hour range, another futures market treat. Sometimes first hour range becomes a working issue 2 days out of the week. You could use it. I'd use it more on NASDAQ than NYSE. The NYSE, they'll go and burn you a tick or two above or below it. It just seems to work a little bit more clearly on NASDAQ. Patterns, and patterns are created all the time. I couldn't live without them. Why are patterns important? Because you don't have to think about them. Your analysis is done when you see it. When I see a symmetrical triangle and price wiggles in this direction, what am I going to do? When I see a double bottom and price moves up into it, what am I going to do? When I see a double top and price moves up into it, what am I going to do? You got to lay out the landscape for yourself and then forget about it. That's the voodoo. Let the voodoo do the work for you. Patterns of the crowd. They're telling you not only the way the crowd is moving that stock, but they're telling you what the insiders are doing with price. A triangle is nothing more than bringing the crowd to its knees, making everybody really quiet, and having your direction pre-planned so that you're positioned. And I'm talking about the insiders being well-positioned because they already know which direction they want to move the thing. Letting the stops build. Congestion forms so that the stops can build up. They need time to build up. When they think there's enough buildup there, greed takes over. The market maker goes, giddy up. I want them. So just in conclusion, I think if there's any message to leave you with, it's that the seven opportunities that you see here are just the tip of the iceberg. The market is creating patterns that have never been written about in a book ever, over and over again. Now, it doesn't mean much unless those patterns have some predictive capacity. The good thing is many of these patterns do. The skill that you need to develop, if you choose, is the ability to read the landscape like a Native American reading tracks, like someone reading tea leaves. It may not look the same way from one time to the next. And in fact, chances are it won't look the same way any two times. Just the way no two triangles look exactly alike. Sometimes you may just get a series of bars that have incredible meaning, but you're not going to find them in Edwards and McGee. You're not going to find them in Elder. Of course, you'll find them at the hard right edge. But you won't find these things because they're setting up unique conditions. The advantage to you as a trader is you're not following the crowd. The crowd's going to follow you because you see what's about to develop, maybe seconds, maybe minutes, before they do so that you can act on it. And you know what? You want to be in place and that crowd comes in behind you to give it a push. That's one of the safest places to be. And the more original your strategies are, the more original ideas you develop and execute on, you're going to be more successful because there's no reason to shake you out of a trade. No one knows you're there. And you operate below the radar. Your profitability will increase. Your win ratios will increase, and perhaps you'll reach that ultimate goal, which is longevity, be doing this 5, 10, 15 years down the road. I want to thank you for your attention. I'd be glad to take any questions, and I want to thank you again for the opportunity of letting me here today. Sure enough.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay.